Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Spotify chooses Joe Rogan over Neil Young. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at the last week in the music business. And this week, we're going to focus on one story alone because there was one big story last week that everyone was talking about, and that is Spotify choosing Joe Rogan over Neil Young.
Yeah, that has become a very big story. That was one of those stories, and this sometimes happens in the CMU Daily, that when it was first happening, we ran it in the "and finally" slot of the Daily Bulletin. And then by the next morning, it was top story.
Yeah.
So it became a very big story, getting coverage all over the place. Even the mainstream press, the mainstream news channels. There was a very interesting guy talking about it on the BBC News Channel this weekend. I saw a very informative
I've heard he was a bit rubbish.
Giving lots of very valuable...
Seemed untrustworthy.
I thought it was the best 3 minutes on this story so far, until the next 25 minutes talking about this story, because we're going to tell the story and we're going to discuss the various different sides of this debate that has been unleashed by Neil Young going to war with Joe Rogan.
Yes, because I mean talking about this story kind of working its way up the ranks, it also we discussed the beginnings of this as the sort of intro aside on Setlist a few weeks ago. And then we were saying, I don't know why we're even talking about this story. It's not relevant to the music industry. And then, and now it's the biggest story in the music industry.
Yes. So not only was it elevated from "and finally" to top story, even more importantly than that, it's been elevated from waffly little intro story on Setlist to a whole edition just talking about it. So it must be important.
Yes, indeed, it must. So, well, let's get into it then, because this is all we're talking about this week. So, Neil Young's music disappeared from Spotify last week after he announced that the streaming platform could carry either his recordings or the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, but not both. Spotify then, perhaps unsurprisingly, chose Rogan, and in doing so, sparked a debate over the extent to which Spotify should regulate what is said in the podcasts that it carries, whether artists who object to what is said in those podcasts should boycott the streaming service as a result, and whether such a boycott could actually force Spotify to change its content policies if enough artists joined in.
Now, as you've already said, this whole thing actually began earlier this month with an open letter to Spotify that was signed by more than 250 scientists and medics. As we say, we discussed that, albeit slightly waffly, at the start of a previous edition of Setlist. That letter declared, and I quote, that the Joe Rogan Experience, the podcast, had a concerning history of broadcasting misinformation, particularly regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. And given that these days the Joe Rogan Experience is a Spotify-exclusive podcast, the scientists and medics who signed that letter said that the streaming firm had a responsibility to deal with the misinformation about COVID and the COVID vaccines, which they said had featured in various editions of Rogan's podcast over the last year or so. Some of the misinformation that has been contained in that podcast, or misinformation, I think we can agree there's been plenty of misinformation in this podcast. Are we going to be diplomatic about that? No. Okay. No. Some of the misinformation in the Joe Rogan podcast was spoken by Joe Rogan himself, although some of it, actually maybe some of the more worrying misinformation, was actually coming from his guests, because, of course, the Joe Rogan podcast is basically an interview podcast. He has a different guest on each edition. Some of those guests have had controversial opinions about COVID-19, have said some controversial things about COVID and the vaccines. And because Joe Rogan, well, I mean, he's not actually that very good at interviewing, is he? Which is, it's interesting that he has the most successful interview podcast that has ever existed.
Interesting slash depressing.
Despite not being very good at interviewing. And as a result, when he has these controversial guests saying controversial things, whereas a more conventional journalist would usually challenge the things that have been said and maybe even have done a little bit of research prior so they can challenge them in an informed way, often Joe Rogan is sort of nodding his head and going, "Oh, that's interesting." So as I say, these scientists, these medics are saying some stuff that Rogan has said himself, some of the stuff that he has left unchallenged on his podcast, this is causing concern. And because the Joe Rogan Experience is no longer a podcast that exists on every podcast platform and YouTube. It is now a Spotify exclusive podcast. It needs to take some responsibility for that misinformation.
Yes. So among the people who took that letter very seriously indeed was Neil Young, who at the start of last week published his own letter echoing a lot of what those scientists and medics had said. And Young said in his letter that Spotify is spreading fake information about vaccines, potentially causing death to those who believe the disinformation being spread by them. He added, with an estimated 11 million listeners per episode, the Joe Rogan Experience, which is hosted exclusively on Spotify, is the world's largest podcast and has tremendous influence. Spotify has a responsibility to mitigate the spread of misinformation on its platform, though the company presently has no misinformation policy. And then he made his ultimatum. Addressing his manager and label, he said, I want you to let Spotify know immediately today that I want all my music off their platform. They can have Rogan or Young, not both.
Now, the reason why that letter and that ultimatum was addressed not at Spotify itself, but at his management team and at his label being Warner Music's Reprise label, is because, and actually we suspected it at the time and he confirmed it in a subsequent note on his website, Neil Young doesn't actually have the right to unilaterally remove his recordings off Spotify because of his deal with Warner Music and with Reprise. And obviously when you do a deal with a record label, often the label becomes the copyright owner in those sound recordings, will certainly have lots of exclusive rights over those recordings. And whether or not you as the artist can say, take my recordings off that platform, and you have to do it, whether artists have those veto rights, well, it depends on the deal. And Young conceded that he did not have that right in his deal with Reprise, although he had removed his music off Spotify once before. In fact, last time Neil Young had a beef with Spotify, it was part of a wider beef with all of the streaming platforms. That was his famous objection to the audio quality of digital music services, both old school download stores and the music streaming services. And in 2015, he hit out about the audio quality of Spotify and the other streaming services. And as a result, for a time, his music disappeared off those platforms. And the fact that in 2015, when he was making a stand over audio quality, Warner Music clearly had allowed his tracks to come off Spotify et al. That did suggest that Warner and Reprise were a label that were prone to try to placate Neil Young when he's having one of his protest moments. Although you have to assume that the royalties coming in from the streaming of Neil Young's music from Spotify in 2022 is probably significantly higher than it was in 2015. So I guess it wasn't a given, but nevertheless, Warner did agree to get Neil Young's recordings off Spotify because of his anti-Joe Rogan protest.
Yes, towards the end of last week, most of Neil Young's catalogue did indeed disappear from Spotify. And in a subsequent letter on his website, Young thanked Warner, saying, Spotify represents 60% of the streaming of my music to listeners around the world. Almost every record I have ever released is available. My life's music. A huge loss for my record company to absorb. Yet, my friends at Warner and Reprise stood with me, recognising the threat that COVID misinformation on Spotify posed to the world, particularly for our young people who think everything they hear on Spotify is true. Unfortunately, it is not. Thank you, Warner, for standing with me and taking the hit, losing 60% of my worldwide streaming income in the name of truth.
Now, with Neil Young's boycott getting way more coverage than that original letter from all those scientists and medics did earlier in January, this time Spotify was forced to respond formally, and it said in a statement as Neil Young's music was being removed from its platform, we want all the world's music and audio content to be available to Spotify users. With that comes great responsibility in balancing safety for listeners and freedom for creators. We have detailed content policies in place, and we've removed over 20,000 podcast episodes related to COVID since the start of the pandemic. We regret Neil's decision to remove his music from Spotify, but we hope to welcome him back soon.
Which is basically an eloquent way of saying, yeah, we choose Rogan. And unsurprisingly, that response led to many other artists and songwriters from across the music community criticising Spotify for choosing a controversial podcaster over a legendary musician. Some accused Spotify of putting profits before ethics, although in a way it was more putting its long-term audio strategy before its relationship with the music community.
Yeah, because arguably, most of Spotify's current revenues come from its music content and its music library, and not from the thousands and thousands and thousands of podcasts that it carries. Because, of course, Spotify has two revenue streams. It has its ad sale revenue stream and its premium subscriptions. But we all know it makes way more money selling premium subscriptions than it does selling advertising. And it seems pretty safe to assume that the majority of those premium subscribers sign up mainly for the music and not for the podcasts. And although, yes, Spotify does have the Joe Rogan Experience podcast as an exclusive, but when that podcast stopped appearing on other platforms and stopped appearing on YouTube and was only on Spotify, well, if you were a Joe Rogan fan, there's a lot of them, you could listen to the podcast on a Spotify free account. So you don't need to sign up to Spotify Premium in order to access the podcast. So I think most Spotify Premium users are there for the music, and premium subscriptions are bringing in most of the money. So actually today, Spotify makes way more money out of the music side of what it does compared to the podcasting side. However, it's no secret that a key priority for Spotify in recent years has been to dominate the podcast market as well as the streaming music market, so that ultimately, long term, it becomes less reliant on its expensive and complicated deals with the music industry. And a big part of that podcast strategy has, of course, involved signing these exclusivity deals with the big podcasts and the big podcasters, and that big $100 million deal with the biggest podcast of them all, that is to say, its deal with Joe Rogan and his podcast, is absolutely key to Spotify's wider strategy in becoming this audio company where music is a big part of the experience, but only part of the experience, not everything. So with all of that in mind, Spotify was never going to abandon its commitment to the Joe Rogan Experience just to placate Neil Young. And to be fair, I'm pretty sure Neil Young knew that. It wasn't that he expected to win this battle, but he wanted to fight the battle anyway on a point of principle.
Yeah, and that said, while you're right that Spotify is never going to drop Joe Rogan, Neil Young's boycott has put the spotlight on the streaming services' content policies. So what is it doing about offensive, abusive, or misleading content on its platform? And this has actually come up once before in 2018, although then it was in the context of music. And that was when, people probably remember, when Spotify unveiled its policy around hate content and hateful conduct. And then the streaming service said it would stop playlisting or prioritizing music that was deemed hateful or working, you know, with artists who had been accused of hateful conduct. But while then some people praised that policy, there was also a backlash, and the whole thing was subsequently sidelined.
Yeah, Spotify's first attempt to deal with controversial content on its platform, albeit in that case music content, turned out in itself to be quite controversial. And it has to be said, if dealing with music and musicians that are controversial was a challenge, which it was, I mean, it was pretty obvious, wasn't it, that dealing with podcast content was going to be even more challenging, because some podcasts, not this podcast, but some podcasts do feature controversial people saying controversial things for an audience that like controversy. And some of that content will be deemed by others to be offensive or abusive or, as in this case, misleading. Now, this is, of course, not a challenge that is unique to Spotify. It is a challenge that has been faced by pretty much every digital platform that allows other people to publish content. And we all know that platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube have been under increased pressure in recent years from users and from advertisers and from politicians to deal with what is often referred to as harmful content that has been uploaded to their platforms. And actually, here at CMU, we actually published a white paper on this last year under our Building Trust series that we have been putting out with a company called Friend MTS, and we'll include a link to that white paper in the notes on the podcast, because this has become a big political issue in various countries, including the UK and the European Union, where politicians, as we speak, are discussing and considering new laws that would increase the responsibility of digital platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and possibly now Spotify to deal with so-called harmful content that has been uploaded to their platforms. But it has to be said that those proposed new laws, and indeed various voluntary efforts by social media and user upload platforms to deal with so-called harmful content, whether it is offensive or abusive or misleading, well, those proposals in themselves have proven to be controversial. Just like when Spotify said it was going to start, you know, demoting and deprioritizing hateful content amongst its music catalogue, then you have a backlash. Well, same thing. All the platforms that have put systems in place to deal with so-called harmful content, and then the various new laws that have been proposed to force platforms to deal with harmful content, they in themselves become controversial because of free speech. And lots of people will say, aha, this will just result in digital platforms censoring people. You get into the whole slightly tedious cancel culture debate. And in a way, part of that comes down to when platforms have so much content being uploaded onto them, inevitably, if you're going to have systems in place to deal with harmful content, some of that is going to have to be automated. Some of it is going to have to rely on the complaints of consumers. And so then you get into the whole, well, actually, when you try and automate the removal of harmful content, a load of harmful content still gets through. Meanwhile, a load of content which isn't offensive, which isn't abusive, which isn't misleading, gets caught up in the filters. So all of this is a big talking point in legal circles and within the digital sector and with the media industries all around the world. And I think a nice summary of it all is it's really quite complicated.
Yeah, and to date, it has generally been, you know, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you know, platforms like that that have faced most criticism in that domain, either for not removing enough content or for removing too much. But given that pretty much anyone can now push a podcast onto Spotify, it faces the same challenges. And it's pretty surprising, perhaps, that it's not been pulled into this kind of debate earlier. And once it couldn't avoid commenting anymore, it's not surprising that Spotify was keen to talk up its detailed content policies that had led to 20,000 podcast episodes being removed, especially as both the scientists and Young had said that it didn't have a proper policy in place for dealing with misinformation. And now that it's been pulled into the harmful content debate, Spotify will likely have to talk up those policies more, even though, as we've said, those policies can in themselves be controversial, as indeed Spotify itself found out back in 2018.
Now, of course, some would argue that however good Spotify's content policies may or may not be, and however careful they need to be when removing offensive or misleading podcasts, in a way, with the Joe Rogan experience, it's different because, as we've said several times, it's basically a Spotify-controlled podcast because of that exclusivity deal that it did with Joe Rogan. And so, therefore, some people would say that Spotify's responsibilities on this specific podcast should be higher than on all the other thousands and thousands of podcasts, including all the other controversial podcasts that are pumped into its system every week. Yet, if you wanted to be critical of Spotify, if you wanted to be a little bit cynical, you could say it almost looks like maybe Spotify is being slacker when it comes to regulating the prestigious Joe Rogan podcast versus all those other podcasts that it did remove on COVID grounds. Now, obviously, we've not been to check what it was that those podcasts were saying. Maybe they were saying even more outlandish, radical things about the COVID pandemic and about vaccines. But you might say, well, hang on a second, if you do have content policies in place that are policing misinformation around COVID-19 and the vaccines, then why were those policies not being enacted on your own podcast, which has so much influence and which is causing all of this controversy? Of course, it may be that behind the scenes, now, whether it was already doing this or doing this in response to that letter from the scientists or from Neil Young's protest, it might be that Spotify is actually seeing if there's anything it can do to change the way that the Joe Rogan podcast is run to deal with some of the issues that have been raised by the scientists and the medics and now by Neil Young. But I suppose in a way, well, whether or not it could get some new editorial guidelines going on the Rogan podcast, I mean, a lot of that will depend on Joe Rogan himself and how willing he is to accept some criticism or some suggestions. I mean, they've paid him a lot of money, but then he sort of comes across as a kind of guy that wouldn't necessarily take that kind of feedback completely without raising any issues on it. And I mean, what could you do with the podcast? I mean, he does sometimes have guests on that kind of give the other side of some of these arguments, but maybe like a BBC News show, if you're going to have one guest on who's going to say something very controversial and you as an interviewer aren't really equipped to challenge that person, maybe you should have a counter-opinion guest on the same edition. So within the, I mean, it's quite a long podcast, isn't it? But within the edition of the podcast, you're hearing both sides of the argument. Or I don't know. I mean, is it, I mean, obviously, what the social media platforms have done around COVID is that whenever anybody says anything controversial about COVID or the vaccine, you get a little info box appearing. I mean, would that even work in the context of a podcast service? I don't know. But it may well be that behind the scenes, as I say, maybe they were already doing this, maybe in response to the letter the scientists sent, maybe in response to the Neil Young boycott and all of the press coverage it's got. Although they're not going to remove the Rogan podcast, maybe they're going to change the way that it's made to deal with some of these issues. We don't know.
Yeah, and if Rogan pushes back on any interference, which, as you say, it's quite likely that he might, that's yet another challenge for Spotify, especially if other artists follow Young's lead on this, and that results in a significant number of subscribers cancelling their subscriptions as artists drop off the platform. And already we saw at the end of last week Joni Mitchell coming out in support of Young and demanding that her music be removed from Spotify as well. She said, "Irresponsible people are spreading lies that are costing people their lives." But the big question now is, of course, will that many other artists follow? And will the, you know, big name rappers, rock stars and pop stars follow? The kind of the more contemporary artists who, you know, speak to the young people of today more so than Neil Young and Joni Mitchell. And those artists will have various things to consider. So firstly, do they agree that the misinformation being spread by Joe Rogan and others is a major issue? If so, are they willing to take a royalty hit by bailing on Spotify? And will they, like Young, need label approval for a boycott? And will they get it? And could they be on the receiving end of a backlash from their own fans by taking on Joe Rogan?
Because let's not forget, he has a very popular podcast.
People like him, don't they?
So for some artists, there's going to be quite a sizable crossover between their fans and his fans. So even if they think what he's saying is wrong and dangerous, and even if they think that they would be able to get their music taken off Spotify, depending on what their deal with their label is, are they really that willing to enter that debate? Over the last couple of days, certainly since Joni Mitchell came on board as a second artist, lots of artist names have been swirling around online. Some artists themselves have been posting social media, generally, again, more heritage artists saying, "I'm looking into getting my music taken off Spotify," or at the very least, "I stand with Neil Young and Joni Mitchell." And then there's lots of gossip and speculation about, as you say, more contemporary artists, younger artists who might. The one that's been doing the rounds, well, Foo Fighters is one room that's going around. I mean, they're not sort of contemporary. Well, they are contemporary, aren't they? But they're sort of in the middle, yeah, almost.
Yeah.
They're not heritage artists, but they're older. But I mean, I still think Foo Fighters are contemporary artists enough that that would potentially be a game changer in terms of whether or not this is a story that's going to rumble on for a few weeks and then disappear, or whether it is going to become a much bigger deal for Spotify. But it will be interesting to see how many other artists, and particularly bigger name, younger, newer artists, join the boycott, or at the very least come out in support and maybe say, for various reasons, "I can't remove my music, blame the label, even if it's not the label's fault. But nevertheless, I support it." Could a big enough boycott actually be staged that would force Spotify to even break off its ties with Joe Rogan? I mean, ultimately, presumably that's a financial question, isn't it? Is, you know, how many subscriptions would they have to lose for the drop in income to be worth changing their policies on Joe Rogan and podcasts and stuff like that? But more likely than them actually getting rid of Joe Rogan is, how much momentum does this campaign need? How much momentum could this campaign get to actually force Spotify to really make some tangible changes? Now, as I say, it may all be working on this, we don't know, but some tangible changes around its content policies. And I guess that may well be both in regards to those podcasts, which it has more control over because it pays for them, plus being more upfront about its content policies across the board for every single podcast that is uploaded to its platform.
Yeah, I mean, I did see one younger, like, not a big name artist, but a kind of a newer artist, saying that they weren't able to remove their music from Spotify because of their label deal, but then saying they'd cancelled their premium subscription and moved to another streaming service and was encouraging their fans to leave Spotify. So that, I mean, that's sort of a two-pronged attack. If you get bigger artists, you know, dropping off Spotify and other artists just going out and telling their fans, go and spend your money elsewhere, then you might see a bit more momentum in terms of people leaving Spotify. And obviously, like we said, you know, the Joe Rogan deal that Spotify did is not, I mean, it is Spotify saying, we think Joe Rogan's good to an extent, but really it's Spotify saying, we think this man can bring us a lot of subscribers that we might not otherwise get. And that's why he's worth $100 million to them. But if the same amount of subscribers disappear, then he's not worth that to them. So it'll be interesting to see, yeah, what momentum this picks up in various different ways. And like I said, whether actually it fizzles out and goes nowhere.
And I suppose in a way, I mean, we've talked a lot in recent months and over the last couple of years on Setlist about the whole narrative that does the rounds that the royalties that Spotify pays are terrible, and that, you know, Apple and Tidal and some others pay much better royalties. Now, as we've explained many times on Setlist, that's not really true because they're all ultimately on the same deals. It's a rev share, etc., etc. But given that that narrative has been doing the rounds, Apple and Tidal are more artist friendly, even if that's not really true. But there may well be some people who've been thinking, oh, it's a bit of a pain to move, and will I lose my playlists? Although I did see some people circulating advice on social media over the weekend about how you move your playlists, because you can do that. But I suppose the point is, if there's some people who have been thinking, oh, I should leave Spotify because I don't pay artists enough, but oh, it sounds like a bit of a drag, can I really be bothered to do that? Maybe that plus this would be the motivation for people to go, actually, do you know what? I'm gonna spend a few hours moving subscriptions, moving my playlists over, and then I can be on a platform which A, pays artists more, even though it probably doesn't, and B, isn't in business with that terrible Joe Rogan. Although, I mean, we've already discussed, he's a very popular guy. There may be quite a lot of people who are Joe Rogan fans who didn't sign up to Spotify when he moved over to Spotify, because you can access the podcast for free, but to stand up for Joe might now actually start paying Spotify £10 or $10 or whatever a month. Plus, I mean, as some people were also saying on social media, a little bit of a Streisand effect going on here. There are a lot of people who've never heard of Joe Rogan, particularly outside of the US, who might now be checking out his podcast for the first time. So, yeah, there's some complicated maths to be done. I mean, assuming we're going to take ethics out of this conversation, there's some complicated maths to be done as to at what point they would actually have to get rid of Rogan. But in the meantime, as I say, that's probably not going to happen, but maybe Spotify does either need to change its content policies or just be more vocal and transparent about its content policies, because in a way, this is a issue that is bigger than the Joe Rogan experience and COVID misinformation.
Yeah, and I think it's another, I mean, it's sort of related to Neil Young, but this is more of a consideration for the future. I mean, if we presume that, you know, the shift to streaming means that controversies like this will happen for, you know, the foreseeable future on and off, because, you know, it's not the same as just selling CDs in the shop. It's not really the same. I mean, I suppose artists could demand that a radio station stop playing their music, but if you know, one radio station not playing your music is not the same as Spotify not playing your music.
And also there are even more licensing issues around,
yes, and that's even
radio.
More complicated.
Yeah, in some countries, actually, you simply couldn't do it because of copyright law.
But I think it's interesting in the context of, like, obviously a lot of artists, Neil Young included, are selling off parts or all of their catalogues, recordings and publishing. And while that gets them an upfront chunk of money, and I think a lot of these kind of older artists are thinking, well, you know, it takes a long time to make the sort of money on Spotify and streaming generally that you used to get in a fairly short space of time releasing a record as a, you know, a physical thing or as downloads. I don't have that sort of time. I want my money now, so I'm going to sell off my catalogue. But are we going to see down the line, maybe 10 years, 20 years, where, you know, these artists are going to start dying off and their estates are going to be left not owning those catalogues and may find that they no longer have any veto rights either. So actually, these protests won't be possible for those estates because they'll be left with nothing. And so, I think the story that you're going to see in 10, 20 years is estates saying, why, if we got no controls over this, we'd actually like that catalogue back now and not going to be able to get it.
And it is interesting to know, I mean, although lots of traditional record deals don't allow artists to just pull down their recordings from streaming services. That said, you know, veto rights or at least rights to consultation can be inserted into record contracts. And bigger name artists, when they're signing their second, third, fourth deal with a label, would often try to get a bunch of veto rights in. And one of those veto rights can be, when new platforms come along, I have a veto over whether or not my music goes there. So there are some veto rights in record deals, even if they don't necessarily allow you to just take your music off Spotify when you want. But, I mean, as we saw with Warner this week, even if those veto rights are not in contract, when you're a label, are you going to allow yourself to have a spectacular falling out with one of your big name artists? And so there is almost a sort of, we need to placate the artist even if legally they don't have the right. So yeah, I suppose where artists have been selling their catalogues basically to sort of investment funds rather than the traditional music companies. I mean, I know some are sort of halfway house, they're half investments fund, half music company, but some are straight up investment funds. And where you're selling it to investment funds, are any veto rights being included in those deals? And if they're not, what are the chances of investors in 20 years' time just placating you because they need to placate you in the way that maybe a label or publisher would? Yeah, so there are lots of different strands to this story that we could go further on, but we're not gonna, because unlike Joe Rogan, we know when it's time to end a podcast.
Yes, and I mean, there is one other thing. I mean, we mentioned it before, but Neil Young, big fan of tip-top audio quality. And he did bring this debate back round to that eventually, because obviously, if you're a hardcore Neil Young fan and you've got rid of all your CDs, all your vinyl, and all your downloads, you've only got access to streaming now, you're going to have to find yourself a new streaming service in order to listen to Neil Young's music, assuming you're a Spotify subscriber, which you probably were. And I mean, Apple in particular has been gloating about this, reminding its users that both Neil Young's music and Joni Mitchell's music are still available on its platform. And then in his second letter this week, Young reminded his fans that if they do switch from Spotify to, say, Apple or Amazon as a result of this boycott, well, there's another benefit other than just taking a stand against Joe Rogan. And that other benefit relates to Neil Young's original beef with the streaming services way back in 2015, because many of Spotify's competitors have dealt with his audio quality complaints in recent years. But despite the fact that it has insisted that higher quality audio is in the pipeline, Spotify hasn't actually yet implemented that. So in some ways, it's lagging behind other platforms now. And Neil Young said in his second letter, many other platforms, Amazon, Apple, Qobuz, to name a few, present my music today in all its high-resolution glory, the way it is intended to be heard. While unfortunately, Spotify continues to peddle the lowest quality in music reproduction. So much for art. But now, that is in the past for me. Soon, my music will live on in a better place.
So yeah, we were saying that maybe some fans would have two reasons for finally shifting from Spotify to somewhere else, which was the perception that the other services pay higher royalties, even though they don't, and the whole Joe Rogan thing, but actually three reasons, maybe. I wonder if there needs to be a fourth reason to have the massive change, and I wonder what that fourth reason
could be. I don't know. I mean, I think it is interesting, actually. I've been thinking about this recently, that Spotify... I mean, we've talked a long time that it's really hard for the streaming services to differentiate between each other. But actually, in a lot of ways, I think Spotify's lagging behind the others now, and kind of because it's the biggest, maybe has stopped bothering. Maybe because it focuses on podcasts, it's not bothering so much with innovating on the music side. Because, you know, Apple Music, you get a lot of stuff, lossless, high quality audio. You get spatial audio, Dolby Atmos, all that stuff. And that, a lot of headphones that people are buying now will have spatial audio and Dolby Atmos, that kind of capability. Those things are becoming affordable. And it does seem like Spotify stands out by not having those things.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of Spotify's innovations in the last year or so have been more behind the scenes, offering tools and analytics and extra things for artists, which are all great. And Spotify is definitely way ahead of the rest when it comes to that sort of stuff. But artists don't tend to talk about that so much on their socials. They just tend to diss the royalties on their socials. So the one thing that Spotify is doing well in music, in addition to all of its stuff in podcasts, is possibly something that most subscribers are going to be least aware of. Yeah. Interesting times.
But that is all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. As mentioned, I think once or twice there will be links to everything we've discussed in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at setlistpodcast.com or in your podcast player as we speak, which indeed might be Spotify because we haven't boycotted it. But yes, do remember to subscribe to the show, maybe on Spotify, I don't know, rate and review it. Email us if you've got anything you want to discuss, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moult and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.